Have you ever wanted to delve into the writings of the early church fathers, but didn't know where to begin? Well, we have just the resource for you. It's our book of the month for December, A Year with the Church Fathers, Meditations for Each Day of the Church Year. You can find out more at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase A Year with the Church Fathers, Meditations for Each Day of the Church Year by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. A Year with the Church Fathers, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
President Obama could do a lot here by just giving aid to the people right now when they need it. And I think as a result of that, it would go a long way with the government in North Korea in easing the tensions with the churches.
We celebrate his birth because the story of Jesus Christ changed the world. For me and for millions of Americans, his story has filled our hearts and inspired our lives.
We have to recognize who we are, beggars. We are beggars, this is true. Jesus comes for beggars. Jesus has mercy on beggars.
You want to do something out of the box, bow your head at the words, and he became man. You want to do something out of the box, you want to do something innovative or relevant, drop a knee at the words, and he became man.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love issues, etc.
When does Christmas begin? It depends on who you ask. It depends on what your interest in Christmas really is. Now, the weird thing is, nowadays, if you really pay attention to what's being said by Christians around Christmas time, they complain a lot about Christ being taken out of Christmas, or Christmas being too materialistic, or Christmas celebrations beginning too early. But if you look at what American evangelicalism is doing, it's buying into an early start date for Christmas, even before the holiday gets there, and it's pretty much forgotten that Christmas actually begins on the 25th and runs 12 days after that. But of course, it's more convenient to begin Christmas when everyone else does, too. What's the difference? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Wednesday afternoon, December the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about media coverage of the Christmas season. Terry Mattingly will be our guest for the first half hour or so of this Wednesday's program. After that, there's a new report from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life on the global Christian population. Some very interesting numbers, some changes, and some things staying remarkably the same in the last 100 years. Conrad Hackett will be our guest. We'll also talk with Dr. Al Culver of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for some analysis of that. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and University. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
When does Christmas start for Pop American Christianity?
Okay, first let's unpack this for a second. For Pop American Christianity. Now, I want you to define that for me just briefly. What do you mean by that?
That's my term of art, trying to be lowest common denominator for American evangelicalism, broadly conceived.
Okay, maybe we could define it another. The thoroughly secular Washington Post writer, the author of a bitter but brilliant book called Tinsel, A Search for a Christmas in America, Hank Stuever, he refers to them as the big box churches.
Yes.
Now, of course, he's playing off Best Buy, you know, and Costco and all of the big box stores. Well, he's referring to this as big box Christianity. And the simple fact of the matter is I have no idea when they think Christmas begins. I have no idea when they think it ends. I think at this point we have to take a pretty complex approach to this whole thing. In the column I just shipped this morning for Scripps Howard, Stuever brilliantly analyzes that Christmas, he believes, officially begins with a press release that shows up in the email boxes of reporters across the country every year from the National Retail Federation. And when they ship that thing out, he says it usually comes somewhere between the last week of September, and this year it arrived on October 6th, and it is the national forecast for the sales figures for Christmas. And he says that is the official starter's gun in the air for the ads, the plans for malls, etc. He says, and in his opinion, that is when Christmas starts. It begins to roll out into public view now increasingly earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier. So that's one view of when Christmas begins. It begins when the people in charge of the malls and TV advertising say it begins. That's when it begins to kind of tug at us like, wait a minute. My own personal, I mean, this is not an expression on my Baptist heritage or anything, but personally for me, symbolically, Christmas begins for Pop America. Let's leave the church out of it for now. Christmas begins for Pop America whenever I see that stupid Corona beer ad with the little lagoon and the little hut, and then in the background are the palm trees, and then one of the palm trees lights up with the twinkle lights, and it says Feliz Navidad. You know that ad?
Yeah.
Been around for like, what, 2 decades or something like that? When I see that ad, officially the sirens are blowing. The culture has commenced with Christmas. I saw it this year 2 weeks before Thanksgiving.
Wow.
During an NFL game. So, I mean, basically this is moving up and up and up. Now, this brings us then to church. Church bazaars, in some traditions, people start kind of the preps for Christmas decorations and stuff late September or in the month of October. For sure, by Thanksgiving, a lot of churches will have already done their Christmas bazaars. I talked with a man who's emerging as one of my favorite figures in evangelical Christianity, and he's the dean of the School of Theology at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And he's a very conservative Christian, but he's one of those rare guys. His name is Russell Moore. And Dr. Moore actually answers questions as if he hopes people are listening. You know what I mean? He's not just talking to the people that already think what he thinks. He's actually talking to people who maybe don't think the way he thinks. He's been following another thing that listeners can actually ask themselves, okay, I can plug that into the formula. He watches when pastors begin their Christmas sermon series. That's one of the whistles that he looks for. And he believes that's now occurring. It's moving closer and closer to Thanksgiving. He also is beginning to pay attention to when churches begin putting Christmas music, special music presentations and whatever, into their services. With my Southern Baptist heritage, I used to think Christmas began for Baptists whenever the church held its Christmas cantata. You know, which is when they hire the two guys to play trumpet and somebody to play harpsichord, and they do a couple of things from the Messiah, and they do some sort of semi-classical Christmas cantata. And that's when you walk out of that service and you can begin telling everybody Merry Christmas. That was used to be the Sunday before Christmas for most people. So what I'm telling you is that we don't know when Christmas is. We just know that the culture is moving it up and up and up. And we know that in order to get to have Christmas where people get to attend things, you've got to move it further and further away from all of their travel and the kind of confusion that occurs in our culture, especially in a culture where you have pretty high divorce rates and you have people needing to get to multiple locations during Christmas and people just kind of like embark onto the road. All of that is saying we don't know. For most American churches, I don't think we now know when Christmas is. So that was a long non-answer. Are you pleased?
Well, something you point out, and I think this is rather insightful, it has to do with the church's amnesia regarding the way the church has historically, over the better part of the last two millennia, marked time differently than the calendar that everybody else uses. And
right.
That is, and so could we call the churches that have abandoned the liturgical year except for Christmas and Easter, could we refer to the big box churches as Christmas and Easter churches too?
Well, possibly, except that they're not actually doing the calendar on those events, are they?
No.
They think they're doing Christmas, but they're not. And I think it's important to realize how recently this has happened, even in the history of Protestantism. I like to point out to people that, you know, the the famous, justifiably in my opinion, the famous Christmas movie called The Bishop's Wife, the one where Cary Grant comes as the angel to try to straighten out, you know, David Niven's marriage and all that. If you look carefully at that, that's a, you know, that's a film that's made right before World War II. So kind of early 20th century, golden days of Hollywood, Bells of St. Mary's, you know, all of that stuff, that era. What's fascinating about that film presumes that people are not starting their Christmas preparations and the major festivities of Christmas until 2 or 3 days before Christmas itself. That, in effect, people are coming home from the final Sunday of Advent and beginning to prep for Christmas, and that Christmas begins on Christmas Eve. Now, that actually is the Christmas tradition. And I've had people, whenever I tell people that, that, you know, Christmas begins on December 25th, then it goes for 12 days, and it ends with Epiphany, you know, on January 6th. And I tell people that, and then they look at me and go, yeah, Terry, I know Orthodoxy is really important to you, and the Eastern Orthodox do things their own way. But, you know, we want to talk about the real Christmas. And I go, actually, I'm talking about Western Christianity. I'm talking about what was normal for Protestants, Catholics, Anglicans, you know, everybody, as recently as certain key points in the 20th century. This has only changed within the lifetime of probably grandparents today. Older baby boomers and those just before. I mean, I was born in 54, and I'm right at the height of the baby boom. So let's just say people from, like, say, one generation or a decade or two before that actually have lived within the time frame that this all changed. And people say, why do you make such a big deal out of this? Well, it really is the larger issue of the Christian calendar and whether we observe things according to kind of the church's rhythms and the church's wisdom, or do we basically just march off to the mall with everybody else? And that's really, to me, what this is all about.
More with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service after the break.
Rocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Christmas season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
How is it that many of the champions of the Great Commission actually deny what the Great Commission says? I've written part two of the Not So Great Commission for the latest Issues, Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Ellie Caro writes about the uncertainty of personal moral improvement and the certainty of the external promises of God. The online Issues, Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the Christmas season. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, do you think that by abandoning the church's way of marking time, these big box churches we've been talking about have by default adopted the culture's way of marking these days?
Well, that's what a lot of people think. I mean, and when you get people as divergent as Hank Stuever and Russell Moore, I mean, one is a lapsed Catholic, outspokenly gay social critic at the Washington Post. When you have him and you have the dean of the very conservative Southern Baptist Theological Seminary of Louisville, Kentucky, when you have the two of them basically reading the modern church as having done the same thing, I think that's a really interesting double signal. You know, that both of them are concerned about the actions of the church and are basically seeing the same game play out. And that's, you know, why I wrote the column the way I did. I guess the main thing for, in terms of my personal beliefs, this matters to me as a churchman. As a journalist, the story here is that to some degree we now have two Christmases. And in an era when the Christmas wars, the fights over putting creches in the public square and all of that stuff, as this increasingly gets more and more and more ink, the whole let's put Christ back in Christmas thing, that story continues to grow. And that's a real story to some degree. I personally wish the church-state separationist in me wishes churches would quit fighting over that and just have like every single church in your city put a creche in their own yard, and a lot more people would see it and heed it or think about it than if we put up one creche surrounded by, I don't know, Star Wars characters, ninja, you know, turtles, and whatever else you have to do to get one up in the public square now and, you know, on public land. I would rather have churches celebrate Christmas than try to get the state to do it, but that's another issue. Journalistically, I think journalists should be paying more attention to the fact that the actual Christmas that is observed by churches attempting to follow the traditions of Christianity, that is now completely and totally countercultural. Which means that's what I meant when I said we now have two Christmas seasons, and they're getting further and further apart, because the shopping mall Christmas, the cultural calendar Christmas, is moving further and further and further up. Dr. Moore from the seminary had a haunting way of putting it in the interview I did with him. He said the question now is whether Christmas will even make it to Christmas.
You want to raise your glass in praise of a story that you say is a religion-free coverage of the holiday season. Where was it, and why do you find it worthy of such high praise?
Well, I think I was winking quite ecstatically, you know, when I did that. No, you're talking about the Men's Day Out shopping festival?
Yes.
Yeah, up here in Baltimore, a shopping mall in the extremely greater Baltimore area. Apparently, this is catching on across the country. And they did a festival for men to shop. And basically, they knew that if you're going to get men out to shop, you got to hit them with alcohol, beef, you know, fatty stuff, and, you know, and sports, and all that guy stuff. And then while they're there, you throw jewelry in front of them. You try to get them to feel guilty about what they haven't bought or have bought for their wives. And just kill it all at once. Just do it. And what I thought was fascinating is in this piece about this totally faith-free mess, in my personal opinion, right in the middle of all that, you had Christmas language. You had, you know, this is what we do for Christmas. People need to be able to take care of Christmas. And I thought, oh my gosh, man, if there was ever one place where I wish the marketers, the retailers, would go ahead and just call it the holidays, you know, it would have been in this story. So I had my tongue thoroughly in my cheek there, in the sense that this to me was a glimpse of what a news story would look like if it actually covered the secular calendar holidays, you know, whatever that steamroller is. And so I kind of had my tongue in my cheek when I did that. But that I'm serious, though, when I say that newspaper editors and reporters need to realize now that we're dealing with two increasingly separate things. And I think they should almost strategize for that in their coverage.
So what are they, if you were going to speak to a newsroom full of religion reporters, religion beat reporters, and say, look, this is what you need to know. Here's the lay of the land with regard to what Christians are doing in America at Christmas time, which is the most general way of putting it, and what angles you need to be looking for. What would that spiel sound like from you, Terry?
Well, first of all, I think it would be interesting to find some evangelicals who are trying to follow the right calendar, and there are some out there. You basically are looking for mainstream evangelicals who are thinking seriously about Advent and who are thinking seriously about trying to do other things during Advent, like foreign missions emphasis, offerings for the poor. That's one clue. Number two, I think the story of the modern Catholic Church, which is following the calendar while knowing that most of its people aren't, I think that's another story that's fascinating and deserves coverage. Of course, you can find the Russian Orthodox and some of the other Eastern Orthodox parishes. Most of our churches are following the modern calendar, but there are churches, especially those associated with the Church of Russia itself, that are on the old calendar. And that puts you celebrating Christmas in early January. That's a really alternative way of looking at it. You know how every year you always see pictures of people marching around in Jerusalem or Moscow, on Orthodox Christmas? Well, you can do that story. But the main thing I would look for is people who are making creative usage of Christmas itself and the 12 days after Christmas. I'll give you just one example. You have, in Catholicism, you have the Latino and Hispanic traditions related to La Posadas, the processions to Bethlehem, which occur, I understand, in the final days right before Christmas. And then you have the traditions of the processions for the three kings, which lead up to Epiphany on January 6th. I don't think I've ever seen much coverage of that at all. And if newspapers have discovered, the Day of the Dead and some of the alternative Latino religious rites at different parts of the year, it might be interesting to find out if America has been very friendly to these forms of Catholic faith. Trust me, there would be beautiful art. If you find people that are doing it, you'd have wonderful art. It would be an interesting thing to cover. So those are just a couple of hints of some of the actual rituals. Among Lutherans, I think it would be fascinating to know if there are any Lutheran churches that celebrate Epiphany in a major way. And if so, how do they mark the 12 days between Christmas and Epiphany? Do they do anything? Are there any alternative services? In Orthodoxy, there are quite a few services during that period of time. And this year, of course, we have the be-all and the end-all. We have a wonderful serve-it-up story, which I imagine some people will cover because of the irony, and that is that this year Christmas falls on Sunday morning. And the fact that we have big box churches and others who are struggling with the issue, should they have a church service on Christmas morning on Sunday, which, of course, to me is a no-brainer, but their whole point there is, well, how do you tell children that we're going to get up and go to church instead of going straight to the Christmas tree? Or do we go to the Christmas tree and, as the old saying goes, it looks like an entire shopping mall has exploded in your living room. Are we going to do that, then turn around and try to drag the kids to church right at the point when they all want to put the batteries in and play with their toys and everything else? In other words, do we dare have that collision between the wrapped presents Christmas and the manger Christmas? Are we brave enough to try to have those two things on the same morning? And if not, what does that say? And my point is that it says there are two Christmases right now, and that's what we're struggling with.
This may not even require more than one word of an answer, about 15 seconds here, Terry. How would you instruct journalists to refer to the pre-Christmas season?
Depends on the story. If you're talking to real believers who are trying to keep it, then it's Advent or Nativity Lent in those churches. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, they can call it the holidays. I don't see it a huge victory for everybody to be saying Christmas in shopping malls and celebrating, in effect, the culture's Christmas instead of the church's.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a new poll from what's actually some research done by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life about global Christianity, the size of the Christian population worldwide, and its distribution. Here's a little taste. 100 years ago, in 1910, the world's population was 1/4 what it is today. There was also 1/4 as many Christians. As the world's population has grown to now 7 billion, well, the number of Christians in proportion to that total population has more or less kept pace. There's a lot more right after this.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
Have you ever wanted to delve into the writings of the early church fathers but didn't know where to begin? Well, we have just the resource for you. It's our Book of the Month for December, A Year with the Church Fathers, Meditations for Each Day of the Church Year. You can find out more at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase A Year with the Church Fathers, Meditations for Each Day of the Church Year by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. A Year with the Church Fathers, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Sued for telling the truth.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In 2010, Congressman Steve Driehaus of Ohio made the mistake of voting for Obamacare. Like many of his colleagues, he was voted out of office soon thereafter. However, Congressman Driehaus blamed the Susan B. Anthony List for his defeat and is suing the organization. He said the Susan B. Anthony List lied when it said on a billboard that he voted for taxpayer-funded abortions. However, it has been well documented that the Obama health care bill essentially nullifies the Hyde Amendment and provides the means for taxpayer money to fund abortions. We will keep you up to date on this court battle.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.